And this is the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM, CIUT. You can hear us on soundcloud.com/Taylor-report, Facebook.com/The Taylor Report. I believe we're joined now by Philip LaRochelle. Are you there, Philip?
Yes, I'm here.
Philip, thank you very much. You have a distinguished career. You have successfully... I'm sending you an award. It'll be in... It's in the mail. No, you did a brilliant job. People should know that. At the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, I had the pleasure of witnessing some days of your work in court. And my memory is your client was acquitted. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah, the first one, not the second one, but anyway,
so the award will come. And that, okay. But you have also been fighting a legal matter of very great relevance to Canada. You have been representing Leon Mugesera, a university professor, who in 1994 was in Canada at the time of the calamitous events, the war and the massacre of civilians, leading later to the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And Mugesera was in this country for, I believe, 19 years. But he was removed, and you were fighting his removal.
Yes.
And now he is in Rwanda, and you have taken his case to the...
Wherever we can.
Pardon me?
I said we are taking his case wherever we can.
Wherever they're open, wherever court is open. It's the African Court for Human Rights and People's Rights in Arusha, Tanzania. So you at least didn't have any trouble finding it. But you won that. Tell us this little story. First of all, you fought that he should not be removed. Does this matter that the victory you just won?
It is connected. There is a loose connection, although there are two different fora. Mm-hmm. Just to go back to when we were fighting here on his behalf, so we had exhausted all remedies in Canada, the federal court and all of it. All of a sudden, there was nothing safe for the Committee Against Torture. So we fought, we made a complaint before the Committee Against Torture, and the Committee Against Torture requested Canada to wait before removing him. And so it's in the context that we started fighting. This is where I pick up the fight. I went before the court here in Montreal, and I requested, by way of an injunction relief, that Canada should respect the request of the Committee Against Torture to postpone the removal up to a time where the Committee Against Torture could perform its assessment as to whether there was a risk of torture. Should he be sent back to Rwanda? And one of the arguments that the risk of torture had been argued throughout the court, and the main argument raised by Canada was the fact that they had obtained diplomatic assurances from Rwanda about not only about the fact that he would not be tortured, but about how the trial would take place, what kind of conditions he would be detained, access to his lawyer, access to his family, and so on and so forth. So that was before he was removed. Mm-hmm. So we went before the civil courts in Montreal. We initially obtained an injunction. The Canadian government eventually managed to have it lifted, and there he was sent back to Rwanda. On one end, the recourse before the Committee Against Torture carries on. We are still waiting for a decision on that, and there's been a lot that's been happening both in Canada and Rwanda regarding the value of diplomatic insurances and the risk that Canada is taking by removing people for Rwanda. Yes. So in the meantime, mm-hmm. So that's still ongoing. The Committee Against Torture procedure is ongoing. Normally, the briefs from Canada and our own briefs are finished, but now we are thinking of reopening the Committee Against Torture case, amongst other reasons, in light of what is taking place before the African Court on Human and People's Rights. And that takes me to the African Court on Human and People's Rights. So the one of the first cases that was taken against Rwanda before that case is the case of Victoire Ingabire. And mm-hmm. you might remember that following the filing of a complaint by Victoire Ingabire, Rwanda simply decided to extract himself from the African Court on Human Rights, and such the removal of Rwanda was taking place on 1st March 2017. So before that was effective, we filed a complaint on behalf of Léon Mugesera before the African Court on Human and People's Rights on the day before it was due to expire, on 28th February 2017. And along with the complaint, we requested some interim measures, asking Rwanda to report on a variety of topics, including those that were the subject of diplomatic insurances by Canada, such as the way, whether his trial was following due process, whether he had proper access to lawyers and family, whether there was also big complaints about how he was detained, medical needs that he has, a special diet, there was a lot of, in total, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, just regarding the judicial process. Then there are more regarding there are requests regarding various articles of the charter, and they concern his detention, they concern his trial, they concern the way he has access to family and lawyers. Mm-hmm. And on all these topics, the African Court of Human Rights has requested Rwanda provide the court with detailed answers about each of these topics. And basically, the decision of last 28 September 2017 is that. So it is not a decision on substance, if you will, about our complaint. It's a decision on the interim measures that we had requested at the time of filing our complaint. And as it is now, Rwanda had 2 weeks to respond, and we have yet to see an answer from Rwanda. So I think that speaks volume in terms of how willing they are to respect the diplomatic insurance that they provided to Canada as well. Mm-hmm. So since Canada has completely failed, as far as we know anyway, to follow up on the diplomatic insurances that they received from Rwanda, we definitely intend to link the result of the procedure before the African Court on Human Rights and People's Rights and the monitoring of those diplomatic insurances by Canada, because as far as we know, it is completely absent.
Yeah. This is Philippe Larochelle. He's a Quebec lawyer and is representing Léon Mugesera. As you lay that out, Philippe, isn't it the case that Canada should argue that they were deceived by the Rwandans in that, you pointed out, Rwanda had signed on to this African court, behaving as though they were going to follow the procedures? But then when it comes time to look at the Mugesera case, then they simply withdraw.
I think it's not looking at the Mugesera. I think it's not because of the Mugesera case that they withdraw, because they withdrew after the Ingabire case. So Ingabire. That's the last lady who had the infortune of running against Kagame.
But it still applies that they, in a sense, deceived Canada.
It does.
Because here they are, the signatory of a respectable court and a procedure, and then when they get in hot water, they simply say, no, we don't play.
But it's regardless of the African Court on Human and People's Rights, I think what is that the real problem is relying on diplomatic insurances from a country that's run by a criminal organization. How can you rely on a gentleman's agreement when the party on the other side is a well-known criminal organization? I think that's where the real problem lies, as far as Canada is concerned. Mm-hmm. Then as far as Rwanda is concerned, for that court, this is just another indication of the complete lack of due process in that country. As soon as something doesn't fit within their views on how things should happen.
Well, there seems to be something wrong with our political culture that people are not addressing this. We've had a guest on this show, David Himbara, who the Canada acknowledges, the British government was the source, that his life was threatened by that criminal regime that you're speaking of. And so they have delivered into the hands of that criminal regime Mr. Mugesera. And not insisted that he be protected and get his rights. Tell us about, one assumed that there would be a fair trial. Did he get?
No, well, you can.
What kind of trial did he get?
It was a mockery of a trial, according to the reports we get from his lawyers. And this is why there's a lot of questions in this order for interim measures dealing with the exact conditions under which the trial took place. So what kind of judicial assistance did he get? What kind of translation? What kind of access to the case file, disclosure issues, access to witnesses, feasibility of obtaining the appearance of witnesses, considering the political character of the trial, and so on and so forth. So there's all these aspects. I don't know. I wasn't in Rwanda. I just get reports, vague reports from the lawyer who probably doesn't speak too much about how it happened.
By the way, didn't they actually end up charging his lawyer or trying to fine him quite a large amount of money?
That I'm not aware of.
Okay.
But I wouldn't rule it out. I
mean, perhaps that's a detail.
That's definitely in the realm of possibility.
I have my own sources on these things.
I can see that.
But it's very dangerous, actually. I mean, that's another matter, to practice law there. A colleague of yours was arrested when he tried to work in a Rwandan court.
Yeah, a while back, Peter Ellinger was definitely arrested when he did that. Yeah.
So what remedy now? I mean, you actually have this, an interim decision by this court.
Well, now we have, basically, they add up until 28 September. So if I'm looking at the calendar here, their date is expired. They add up until last Friday to answer. So now is the time where are we taking this up now? So I'm not alone in this case. I'm working with other lawyers and a professor in law. And yes, we are considering a variety of possible follow-up procedures, I would say, either in Canada or before the African Court on Human Rights, and even other fora. Like, definitely we will keep the Committee Against Torture informed of the development in this case. Mm-hmm. And we are studying what kind of remedies are available even here in Canada, considering the fact that they were acting under the guise or the spell, I should say,
yes,
sort of a mystic formula of diplomatic insurance. So these things definitely do not work in a case like that.
Yeah. Again, it's Philip La Rochelle. And your colleagues were Genevieve Dufour of Sherbrooke.
And David Pavot. David Pavot and Joseph Dufour of Sherbrooke University, who also did a tremendous amount of work in this case. They run a student human rights clinic there, and they decided to get on board very early on. And
this thing
would not have been possible without their help.
Their students were involved as well.
Sorry? Definitely. Yeah. Basically, students get credit for that. They work very hard, and it counts towards their session. And they are supervised by teachers, the teachers Pavot and Dufour. And it's also thanks to, and I would like to publicly thank them, because it's also thanks to them that we managed to pull this off.
Yeah. You know, of course, Mugesera partly is in problems because they made him a poster boy, in a sense, did they not? When the events happened in 94, suddenly he became the focus of a lot of publicity here. I remember listening to it on CBC radio. And it was as though he was a player. And I noticed they used the word political operative. But he was a university professor who at one time or another was an advisor to ministers in the government. But the word political operative makes him into kind of a power broker. So he's been
Which is not the case at all.
He's been misrepresented from the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. That's why when you look at it from a different perspective, Canada, within the legal box of things that are available, this trial could have been held here. You know, they did other Rwandan genocide cases here. In conditions which, you know, where you cannot question. Of course, there are always issues about access to evidence and the extent to which it is fabricated and manipulated when it emanates from Rwanda. But at least here, you are satisfied that you have an independent judiciary that can look at it in a more serene way than any judge in Kigali who will really feel at risk of taking a view that may diverge from, you know, the usually accepted views of the regime.
Mm-hmm. Philip, thank you very, very much. It's Philip LaRochelle and a brilliant defense team and students who've really been doing their job. I wish this was going on across Canada. We might actually win some justice for Leon Mugesera and his family, who suffered now for more than 20 years. We want to follow this, of course, and you say at the end of the week there's...
At the end of last week, so we are currently studying what's next. So mm-hmm. I'll definitely keep you posted on what we do next.
Yeah, please do, and best wishes. We thank you very, very much.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's Philip LaRochelle. He is a brilliant lawyer from Quebec. There are many, and we are few. Anyway, we do congratulate them on their hard work, and it just shows. You should follow this. This is an individual who basically has been demonized. And there's, Phil, you may know the old saying, you can give a dog a bad name and kill it, right? Isn't that roughly how it goes?
That's certainly how this
the idea of the yellow dog, it's called.
Yeah, I think we should remind our listeners that when he was extradited, they went to the extraordinary step of not allowing him to face the witnesses against him, right? I think the witnesses were behind a screen or something when there was a Canadian.
There was some of that. That happens, by the way, now in all these courts.
Yeah.
And transparency is an essential part of justice, and we tend not to get it.